Donna Reed, of course. He played in Donna Reed's Son of the popular sitcom. But anyway, Paul Peterson, so if you know anybody in the business that wants, help me. You might be able to, actually. Meanwhile, we continue. Coming up at 4 o'clock, James Fitzgerald, so round, so firm, so fully packed, the joys of smoking cigarettes. No, he's not kidding. Well, he means it. I used to, the unapologetic tobacco lover. That's right. New, revised, updated for the 21st century, the ultimate guide to all of those who are slowly but surely being made into pariahs. Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know. Anyway, that's coming up at 4 o'clock. Kevin Moore, examination of black Americans, that is to say, black stereotypes about race. For instance, why do black people get to use the N-word and nobody else can? Is it really true that a black man can call a black woman a biatch and get away with it? Why is that? Why do black people talk that way anyway? What is a do-rag? Not a do-run-run. And why is it that black people can dance but they can't swim? And how come they have an entire month but Native Americans have absolutely nothing? They don't have a day. No, Columbus Day ain't it, believe me, I assure you. Anyway, that'll be coming up next hour with Kevin Moore. Meanwhile, we're going to talk about humor and the awkward, embarrassing moments, which, by the way, has got to be some of the best material for anything. Ask anybody who does stand-up. But a call-in show, to be sure, about, everything from food in your teeth to why it is that people are trying to not say anything and you know that there's something wrong and you find out later what it is and you're completely disgusted with yourself. But personal embarrassments, techniques to improve your own sense of humor, self-effacing jokes, opening yourself to your inner creativity, whatever the blazes that is, taking control of your inner voice. I don't even know what that is. I hear my inner voice. I got three or four in there, and by the way, they always argue. And the positive physical psychological effects of a humorous approach to life. And David Jacobson, good morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
I have no idea. I've got a clue. It's one of those big questions. 7.5 habits of highly humorous people. I'm going to ask the obvious. You know what it is.
What's a half habit?
Yeah, what's a half a habit?
That's a good question. I guess it's an obvious one, huh?
Yeah, well.
Anyway, half habit's one you don't need to do all the time in order for it to be effective. So if you do it half the time, you'll be doing twice as well. And that's a half habit of changing your thoughts from negative to positive.
That's a half a habit.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Because no one can be positive 100% of the time, right?
Well, that's so true. But the other seven seem to be in full play, right?
They are. The others are all in full play.
Okay. So at least those seven are 100%. You wrote this, obviously, to help people who are socially awkward, but also how to, get somewhat happy with oneself, I guess? Is that a fair statement?
Well, yes, to improve your own sense of humor, basically, yeah.
But to feel, comfortable in your own skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do you ever do stand, did you ever do stand-up?
No. I did once at one of those open mic nights, and that was okay, but it's really not my thing.
Yeah, it's a tough gig.
Not great at being a joke teller and that kind of thing.
I'm sure you're aware that people who are in that business are actually, they're motivated by a lot of dark emotion.
Yes, yeah. There's a lot of, they say a lot of comedians have gone through a lot of tragedy.
Well, they're not happy people as a general rule. That may seem hard to believe to some people because they're so funny, but when you find out about their real lives, they got into the businesses of doing this because they weren't happy.
I guess you could say that's the dark side of it, but being able to experience such tragedy, usually people can experience joy that much more because they've been through those rough times, too.
Well, that's how you get people to laugh. Everybody recognizes, certain things that comics hold up in stark reality and in contrast, but the difference is that most people they move on beyond that sort of thing. It's not their lives don't hang them up.
Yeah, they do, and that's actually the third habit is keeping your eyes open for humorous situation, which is something that comedians do all the time. If you think about who your favorite comedians are, if you saw the world the way they did, you'd actually be looking for humor a lot more than the average person does.
Yeah, yeah. In your list here, of course, you have them by chapters, I want to talk about some of those. First of all, you have a theory of humor, and I'm curious. Every comic writer, every comic has a theory of humor and what is humorous. What is your take on all of this?
My theory is the theory of humor-gy is what I call it, and humor-gy is kind of like the humor force. We're all familiar with Star Wars, right, and the force. Well, there's also a humor force out there. So my theory is that when you laugh together, when people are smiling and happy together, there's a connection there, and we feel that connection. When you think about the people you hang out with, who's your best friends and all, it's people you have fun with and laugh with, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's simply it, is that it's the ability to produce humor with those that are you're more comfortable with and connected to.
The chapters we talked about the half a habit, but let's start about habit 1 through 7. I'm very curious because I don't have the book. I just got the table of contents and the preface. But I'm very interested in how you what you're doing here and with these seven.
Okay, well, each one of these seven are daily humor habits. So I'm trying to think of, well, what do I do on a daily basis every day that might be a little different than most people? I don't have any superhuman ability to do other things, but what I notice that I do a little different is these things on a regular basis. So that first habit is to treat humor as a necessity, not a luxury. So if you made humor a priority in your life, and you'd actually be happier and healthier if you did that. You'd be twice as healthy, actually, if you just treated humor like it was a necessity rather than a luxury.
Do people regard it as some kind of, I know that when I was a kid growing up, my folks would say, life isn't about having fun all the time. And I'd consider, well, what's the point? if it isn't about having a good time and having fun, I don't want to be on the planet. Why am I here?
That's a really good point, because we all get that message as we grow up. That's why when we're kids use humor so much more than adults. They have more permission to act silly and do silly things because you're a kid. But as soon as you get older, it's, get serious and grow up.
Yeah, well,
so we learn that, as we grow up, we have to be more serious.
Yeah. Everybody used to say when I was working in music as a disc jockey, say, when are you going to get a real job? And I kept looking at him and said, hey, this is a real job.
Yeah.
But he said, yeah, but you're just having fun playing music. I said, yeah, and they pay me and everything. What's your point?
Yeah, that is a great example. Anything that's considered a lot of humorous, a lot of people don't take that serious. But actually, the people that take their humor seriously are healthier than most people. And they're not as afraid of those awkward moments. They don't stress them out like it stresses out most people to be embarrassed.
Well, it's funny, comedians, and I'm speaking more specifically, although George Carlin was a great example of what he used to call the oh yeah joke, because everybody understands exactly what it means because they've been there and done that. It's like, oh yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a thing in your head that goes off. But when it comes to self-effacing jokes, women are really good at this sort of thing.
Women are better, I think, at self-effacing jokes, poking fun at themselves over, making fun of other people.
Right, yeah, exactly. And embarrassing moments. They always talk about embarrassing moments and usually awkward moments in the social setting. Guys don't do that kind of thing. Even the funniest of the funny.
Yeah, it's when you're able to do it, it shows that you're comfortable poking fun at yourself and you're confident. Actually, you're giving that message that you're a confident person because you can poke fun at yourself. But, yeah, you're right. Most guys, that's embarrassing. And we think things like, oh, gee, I was so embarrassed, I wish I were dead, which is a really strong statement when you think about the words you're using
to
say something like that.
Yeah, well, I keep thinking, you know, maybe a couple of examples come to mind that would say that, guys, but most of the guys, you know, they don't say that. You know, they would rather not even go there.
Yeah.
You know, at least of all be dead. You know, what they want to do is just, you know, if they, nothing else, they just simply make a joke out of it as best you can. But
yeah.
But so self-effacing is a good start, you think? I mean, as far as trying to get a gig, a joke going?
It is. If you can poke fun at yourself, there's we've all had embarrassing moments, and I have great examples that most of the time they're really pretty funny when you think about them. Afterwards, they happen. But the sooner you can get to the point of laughing about them, the better it'll be for you.
So that's a good place to start?
Yeah, it's a great place to start. There's a few examples I've heard, and, you know, the funny thing is most of those, a lot of them, the examples are female examples. There's a story of one lady that was down in her basement doing the laundry, and she took everything off, put her underclothes, and put on her son's football helmet and banner, and heard the knock at the door. Meter man came down to read the gas meter. She panicked, grabbed this football helmet and banner, and hid in the corner while he came down and read the meter. And he read the meter and went back up the stairs, and she breathed a sigh of relief. And as he's walking out the door, he yells down, "Gee, I sure hope your team wins, lady." You know, so it's that thing of being busted and embarrassed at what we do.
Yeah, busted.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples of that. So 9 out of 10 times when you share those types of experiences, people really appreciate it because they do see the humor in it.
Yeah, yeah. And Chapter 2, what's all that about? What's that about? Oh, I'll tell you what, let's take a commercial break, and when we come right back, we'll pick up on Chapter 2. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll just do a chapter by chapter.
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise nobody knows what the hell this is all about. 303-713-8585, the number. It's 19 after 2 o'clock, and again, how to make humorous situations work for you. How to do it. In fact, you know, how you can be a humorist. He's a social worker, author, a poet, and professional speaker. But has spent his life trying to investigate the effects of humor on a person's psychology and physiology. And this one is, of course, his latest book entitled The 7.5 Habits of Highly Humorous People. As we take a Querfunkel weather forecast, it's going to be, well, it's going to be okay. A little bit of clouds late in the day, but it's going to be about 80. It's going to be a pleasant day. Then we have weather moving in. Going to change into weather coming. Yeah, sure there. You betcha. 50 degrees right now. It's partly cloudy. That's the official temperature. Downtown, it's about 52. Outside the studio, it's about 48. And up in Bold Air, it's 54. For some reason, it always gets warmer up in Bold Air. I don't know why. 303-713-8585, the number. And back again with my guest. And again, we're talking with David Jacobson, the awkward, embarrassing moments, how to make your life a little bit funnier, because people like funny people. They like it. What do you like in a person? Oh, I want to thank the humor. Have you ever noticed everybody says that? I want to thank the humor.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell that means. Okay, habit number two.
Habit two is the use of self-effacing humor. The first one was treating humor as a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a life force.
Right. So, and that song, Homeward Bound, you know, I had that 45, and if I remember right, the boxer was on the other side.
Great poetry, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I was just talking to my first guest, Paul Peterson. He used to be on the Donna Reed Show. He runs an advocacy group for child actors who are now obviously not working.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking briefly about the Simon and Garfunkel writing. He said, I'm not one of those that listen to the writing that closely. And I'm thinking, how could you miss this stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this really is
poetry.
Yeah, it's pure poetry. I mean, The Boxer is a great example. I am just a poor boy. My story seldom told. I was squandered my resistance on a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a great line or what?
I love that. Yeah, that was one of my favorite songs.
That's an incredible line. In fact, I did a documentary piece using that, a very brief documentary piece for a newscast. This is back, oh gosh.
Well, he has a great sense of humor, Paul Simon himself.
I always thought Art Garfunkel had to have, because whatever happened to Art?
Yeah, he wasn't quite as popular as Paul was.
Which is ironic, because, you know, they were something. I mean, together they were that magic. You know, Paul obviously has become a much well-known and accomplished producer, director, and writer of the material. His Graceland album, which is without a doubt one of the best albums of all time.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, but...
And, when I think of the humor side, I think of the song You Can Call Me Al.
You Can Call Me Al.
That's a funny song.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just meant to be a silly, funny song, I think. It was like, well, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Why am I soft in the middle now?
Yeah. The rest of my life is hard.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Number two is self-effacing. You know, a good place to drag up stuff if you're looking for material. Is that the idea?
Yes.
Now you realize, you know, I got to tell you, you know, there's a point at which, though, that gets old, too. You know, you have to be careful with that kind of thing.
Well, you have to be careful for two reasons. One is because it gets old, and the other is if you're poking fun at yourself all the time, it's not great for your own self-esteem.
Well, I was going to say, your psyche might get a little twisted.
You know, what I advise with that is that a lot of people, if they can't do that without getting their psyche all twisted up, you poke fun more about your home team, your neighborhood, your community, your family, things that are close to home but aren't you personally. So that's one way to get around that if you get stuck getting overly involved with the self-effacing humor.
So that's a whole chapter is how to work on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's all on using self-effacing humor appropriately, because there is appropriate and inappropriate humor. We know that.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, too, is, you know, because it can become rude.
It can, and here's the most fascinating thing is that when we laugh at appropriate humor, you know, when we see, like, slapstick or things that are funny and we know no one's really getting hurt, we have positive physiological effects in our body, and they measure the biochemicals in your tears and your saliva.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a positive physiological effect. There's no doubt. There's research done on that. But if you laugh at someone who's actually in pain, those effects don't occur. It just doesn't happen, which is, I thought, was really fascinating when you think about it.
Someone who's in pain.
Yeah, if you laugh at things like at poking fun at other people or putting down other people, it's not a healthy type of humor.
No, well, it certainly isn't healthy on the person on the receiving end.
No.
What about the joke maker? Is that going to come?
Exactly, no, the joke maker does not get a positive physiological reaction in their body from that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of just desserts.
Right.
Yeah, this comes back to be careful what you wish for here. Number three, what about chapter three?
Keeping your eyes open for humorous situations,
yeah.
Actually, or using humorous fantasies, or what I call creating them with your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that kids do naturally, and as you said, you know, we get those rules when we're older, you know, wipe that smile off your face, and you think that's funny, boy, I'll show you funny.
Yeah,
so,
right, yeah.
Adults are actually able to retain those fantasy skills or that humorous imagination actually have better sense of humor than other people. So it's very, keeping your eyes open for humor helps to promote divergent thinking, and that, which is a characteristic of creativity. If you want to be creative, you want to keep your eyes open for humor.
Hmm. Chapter number four, which is actually, we do habit one, habit two. Four is habit two. Habit three is chapter five, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yes. So habit four is to basically three is keeping your eyes open for that.
Mm.
Four is using the power of humor and its influence on yourself and others. So it's basically making things better by using the power of humor for your own well-being.
Well, that goes back to habit number one, actually.
Yeah. It does, because that's what the self-effacing humor does. But I mean, some examples of four of actually using humor for yourself and others, it can help others if they're angry or in a bad mood, too. For example, one day I was going to do a humor lecture at a church. It was on humor and spirituality.
Mm.
And I was running late, so here I am, I jump in the car, and I'm racing across town, and it's raining out, and this guy cuts me off in traffic, right?
Mm.
So how do you feel when someone cuts you off, just misses your front bumper?
Yeah.
But you're really mad.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to catch up to him at the light to give him the look.
Uh-huh.
You know the look.
Yeah.
You got to give.
Right.
So I'm catching up at the light. He's at my right, and I'm pulling up, and I'm thinking, let's see, where am I going and what am I going to talk about? Oh, I couldn't just give them the look. It wasn't in line with this habit. So what I did instead was I pulled my arms out of my sleeves, I put my handicap placard on the mirror, and I grabbed the steering wheel with my teeth.
Oh, my God.
Kind of glanced over at the guy. He wasn't mad anymore. He felt horrible for what he did, and I'm kind of grinning at him and nodding, and I'm not mad anymore either.
So I
have arthritis, so I do have the handicap placard, so, you know, not that I'm recommending driving around like that.
Yeah, but you're just staring with your teeth. That's too funny.
So that's the point, basically, is that was using humor to help myself and others at the same time. That's the power of humor.
Yeah, now, I don't know if you actually write the material for yourself, but, you know, you obviously are pretty quick on your feet.
Thanks.
I would think that in order to be, a lot of people, that's something that they're not, is quick on their feet. People say, oh, I should have said this, or I should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, that's always, and it's only an hour too late, of course.
Yeah, and I call that's being full of shoulds, right? But if you're like that, you can earmark that, bookmark it, and the next time it happens, you will be ready.
Yeah.
It only takes once, and believe me, we run into these situations all the time. So if you can just keep in mind, okay, the next time this happens, I'm going to do so-and-so, it actually will occur again or something similar, and you'll be ready the next time.
Yeah, yeah. So as you say, it's the full of should world.
Mm-hmm.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Right.
Yeah, and we all do that. We all do that.
Oh yeah, that's again, that goes back to the negative thoughts too. Well, I should have done this.
Often that's the motivation. I should have killed him.
Right.
That's unfortunately true too. Unfortunately, that's a fact. We do that.
Yeah.
You know, but can somebody sharpen up their on their feetness? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Can they do that? I mean, is there any help you can give to someone who said, okay, this is how you... I always found, oddly enough, and I learned this when I was in junior high. I had... We had a... in the seventh grade, you had to take public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You had to. And I remember everybody had to get up and do an impromptu speech at the beginning of the year. And I got up and I started talking, and these kids are cracking up, and I'm thinking, I have no idea why they're laughing, but I'm digging this.
Yeah.
So, and I figured out that you can say anything as long as you do it with the right cadence.
Oh, that timing and cadence is very important. There are factors involved. There's the tone of your voice, the volume of your voice, and the cadence. Those three factors.
Yeah.
If you can master that, then you've got it.
Yeah, I mean...
A lot of people are more natural at that than other people.
Yeah, the idea about a good punchline, half a punchline is the way it's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can say stupid things if it's said in a funny way.
Yeah, I know you've seen comedians that just walk on a stage and don't say a word and just look around and people are already laughing.
Yeah, yeah. Stephen Wright. Remember Stephen Wright?
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Yeah, I mean, he'd deadpan. He'd sit there or stand there. He wouldn't do anything. And you'd start laughing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love his stuff. I remember one of my favorite of his is, I once went to the museum that had all the arms and heads from all the other museums in it. You know, it's just the way he thinks.
Yeah. I keep thinking, you know, there's other examples of incredibly funny people who are so quick. You know, Robin Williams comes to mind right away.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
He is a master.
Yeah, I mean, he's lightning.
Mm-hmm.
When he's done, you're exhausted.
Yes, and he's someone, I mean, talk about the tragedies and the hard times in life. He's done that, been there, and you don't even know if he's on stage, whether he's sober or not. He is so good, he could be totally out of it and still be funny.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he admits, he said, you know, he used to have a serious drug habit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you never knew anyway. Like you say, I remember the first HBO special he did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I don't know if you ever saw that one. It was just, wow.
Yeah, I did. That was hysterical. It really was.
and I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, I remember him when he was played Mork from Ork,
mm-hmm.
you know, Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
And by whatever happened to Pam Dauber, who knows? But, you know, here's this guy, and he's playing this incredibly funny, weird guy. And then he did his HBO special, which took Mork to a level, you know, Mork on drugs now,
oh, yeah.
and, you know, I'm coming over here now. And, you know, we sat there, and we just cracked up. I said, I can't believe it. And it was all right off the top, right on his feet.
Yeah, I remember cracking up at that, too. And cracking up for me was different because of the physical pain I was in with the arthritis. You know, what Norman Cousins said in his book, Anatomy of an Illness, 10 minutes of hearty laughter gave him 2 hours of pain-free sleep. I know that was true because it was true for me. I could cut down on narcotics just because of that hearty laughter like that. It really takes the edge off.
Yeah, is that a good sex, one or the other?
Yeah.
That takes the pain away, too.
Well, that, too, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that works for me, actually. when we come back, we'll talk about number 5, 6, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so don't go away. And we're talking again with David Jacobson, Awkward Embarrassing Moments, How to Get Humor to Work for You, 7.5 Habits of Highly Humorous People. Say, well, these are habits? Well, yeah, you have to work on them, of course. We continue on News Radio 850 KOA.
That's fine. Buy a big, bright green pleasure machine.
Yes. A double entendre kind of song, a two subtext reality song. You're probably thinking, huh? How to make fun of the commercialism of commercialism, and then there's that thing about bright green pleasure machine, which of course is something else again. And we all know that they never had any trouble admitting their bad habits. Back again with my guest. Did you ever think about that one, Dave?
No.
Not until just now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're going to go back and listen to it, aren't you? Say, okay, where the hell is that damn album?
Yeah.
Anyway, David Jacobson with us, The 7.5 Habits of Highly Humorous People. We continue. When we last left our hero, he was hanging on a cliff on Chapter 5.
Yes, which is to use your humorous imagination to improve your communication. I call it co-humorcation. When you think about communicating with people, one thing that makes it more difficult is if you don't like the person you're communicating with, or if the person you're communicating with is mad at you, which is usually our loved ones, our friends, the people we hang around with the most also are the ones that it's that kick the dog syndrome, where whatever's closest to you is kind of going to get it.
Poor dog.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a dog. I haven't kicked it.
What does a dog do?
So the idea here is, like, if someone's angry and they're yelling at you or you're not wanting to talk to them, use your humorous imagination, like, well, what would they look like if cheese were coming out of their ear, you know, or something silly like that.
Mm.
And this one I actually got the idea from Robin Williams when he did his Elmer Fudd Fila song. Remember that one? When he sang Fire.
Oh.
He used Elmer Fudd's voice doing it.
I'm
driving in my car.
One of the best roles I ever saw was when we played Popeye. But that's all in the story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, in this one, I mean, so, again, it's thinking like, what would Elmer Fudd do in your situation?
What would Elmer Fudd do?
When, if you can get to that point, then you're not going to be angry anymore. You've stepped away from yourself. And humor gives you that ability to be more objective, to look at things from that humorous perspective rather than from the angry perspective. So it does help. Humor is a great communication tool, and that's one way to use it. It helps you have fun and reduces anxiety, so those roadblocks that block communication are knocked down.
Hmm. And that's number 5.
Number 5.
All right, now, how about number 6?
Number 6 is more the most difficult one to explain. You asked me about my theory of humor.
Yeah.
Number 6 is humorize with humorgy. And that's a whole chapter itself. When you can take all parts of yourself and you add the spirit of humor, you experience wholeness in a way you can't really describe that. You can only feel it. Like when you have a really hearty laugh, how would you describe that to a person? It's something that you got to experience. You can't just describe it. And that's what humor G is. It's kind of like using that humor force to lift yourself up and have the ability to change those feelings and thoughts to humor. So Humorize with Humor G is having the ability to share the spirit of humor and to change your mood, basically, through your own, by using humor.
Yeah. Of course, you know, I keep thinking, you know, have you ever seen the TV show The Office, Steve Carell?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good. It's good. It's a good show. And of course, a lot of the humor is sort of kind of unbeknownst to the guy who's, you know, saying something, and everybody's just laughing, and they don't know why they think it's so funny. But yeah.
Well, you know, I've seen that once. Now that I think about it, yeah.
And I happen to enjoy that kind of a setting, but unfortunately, and I got to tell you, I don't know about you, but you go into an office, and this is especially true about bosses, who, incidentally, as a general rule, mid-level manager types have no sense of humor whatsoever.
I would say I agree with that. I think that's true. And you think about it, they're getting it from both ends.
Yeah, I mean, so to speak, as it were. But nevertheless, the mid-level management, which is usually the kind of people you work in the office, you know, the cubicle reality of these people,
mm-hmm.
they unfortunately just have no sense of humor. And if you try to make something funny, they think you're being a wise guy, or worse, they know it's funny because everybody laughed and they didn't get it, so they don't like you anymore.
Yeah, there's so many sitcoms based on that premise, I think. Yeah, it's really true.
Yeah, I saw a movie, and my producer gave it to me. What was that flick, Steve? Office Space, which, by the way, yeah, I mean, there was a mid-level manager who was absolutely humorless.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in the office were always trying to, you know, make things kind of funny. And he didn't get it.
Right, yeah. That goes way back. I mean, even the Dick Van Dyke Show was like that at the office. When you think of all those characters way back then, their boss just didn't get it. And he was the butt of many of the jokes because of that.
Yeah, that was Richard Deacon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, what was his name? The little guy. Baldy.
Mel was his character. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, and he used to make fun of his bald head.
Yeah.
And Richard Deacon, you know, he had absolutely no sense of humor at all. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with people like that?
Well, I use humor to deal with that. You can't make them change the way they are, but you can at least help yourself and your own perspective on it. So some people you're just not going to get through. I mean, you're just going to have to accept them for how they are, and you use the humor. I use humor with everyone, and an important part of that is actually getting to know the type of humor that they appreciate. Because even though there's people that apparently have no sense of humor, everyone's got a little bit, and there's always something that they see a certain extent funny. So not an easy one, you know, not easy to deal with difficult people like that, but you can make the situation lighter for yourself.
Yeah, I have a bad habit of being, you know, kind of the guy in school that you remember in school who could always make a joke about somebody or something, or would, for instance, mimic the...
You? I'm shocked. No.
Shocking! Shocking!
I'd expect that. So you were like the class clown.
I was.
I was kind of like that, too.
Yeah, I would tell a joke, you know, or, you know, I would mimic the stodgy, weird teacher, you know, and I couldn't help it. I just couldn't help myself.
I could picture you doing that.
Yeah.
That's true. That goes along with that range of sense of humor where, on that bell curve, some people are way on the high end and some are on the real low end. But I think anyone can improve on it even more.
Well, as I say, I mean, it was something I did. Of course, I always got in trouble for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you, a wise guy? And I went to a Catholic school, okay? I mean,
okay.
Imagine this. You know, and by the way, the nuns have no sense of humor at all.
No. They don't have, you could say, humor habits. Their habits were not...
That was the only thing they had was a habit. And they usually there was a ruler stuck in there.
Yeah, they're not allowed to do that today, that ruler on the hand thing.
Oh, I don't know. Is there some Catholic schools? Because they're private schools.
Oh, they can do that still?
Private school. Now, you know, they have to, obviously, they have to tell the parents what's going on here. But, mm-hmm. I mean, anybody who ever went to a Catholic school knows that that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, you can't abuse children. You can't do that. I say, well, it's not abuse. This is a rap on the knuckles with a ruler. You know, it just so happens that in private schools, there's a certain set of values a little bit different. And we're going to take one more break and head it up to the top. So with that, we'll take one more quick flashback to how to get the book. So stick around, kids. 303-713-8585, the number you're listening to, News Radio 850, KOA. We continue. 59th Street Bridge Song. Anyway, back again. And David Jacobson, whose book is out there, it's called The 7.5 Habits of Highly Humorous People. And the book available?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and you can actually go in the store and order it, too. It may not be in the area, but it's available online at Amazon also and on my website at humorhorizons.com.
All right. And they can get it on either way.
Mm-hmm.
And, David, thanks so much. Are you doing seminars, that kind of thing?
I do. I do a lot of lectures and seminars on humor workshops.
I kind of figured that, yeah. I do a workshop on funny.
Yeah, I have to say, you make it real easy and comfortable to be a guest on your show, too. Thanks.
Well, thanks so much, Dave. Good luck and have fun.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to take it up, of course, a bit of a news update. When we come back, Kevin Moore. Did you ever wonder why an examination of some of the questions about black culture, stereotype, etc.? Well, that'll be coming up momentarily on News Radio 850 KOA.